Hello and welcome to the Anonymous Anthropologist Podcast. I'm your host, the Anonymous Anthropologist. I am a community college professor of anthropology with more than 14 years of experience in the classroom, and today I'm here to teach you something. Hello, it's your friend, the Anonymous Anthropologist, back with you again after a very long absence. I am sorry that I was gone for so long, but I'm back now, and the first thing that I need to do is explain to you where I was and what I was doing. The first thing to say is that I am no longer anonymous. For a long time, I felt like I had split personalities. I had an identity as a community college professor. I had an identity as an anonymous podcaster. I had an identity as a semi-professional landscape photographer. And I had an identity as an anonymous blogger. And all of these things were floating around on different websites. After a while, it became pretty untenable trying to manage everything. But mostly, it was my own identity, fractured into these different parts, that really became unmanageable. Now, in addition to this, I was going through a personal crisis, and those of you who read the blog may be aware that I finally came to the conclusion that I am actually a transgender individual. At the age of 49, I decided to have what I think of as the world's biggest midlife crisis. I finally accepted the fact that I am male-identified and made the decision that if I was going to move through the rest of my life as a happy human being, that I had to make some changes. So I came out as a transgender individual, and I began a transition from female to male, an FTM transition. Some of you may have noticed that my voice is a little bit deeper, and that is part of the changes that are going on. Now, I know for a lot of you, this is a pretty shocking piece of news, and I understand that I need to educate you about what it is I'm doing. First, though, let's set the record straight. My name is L.W. Lucas Haston. This is actually official as of just a couple of days ago when I went to court and got my official court order for my name and gender change. Prior to just a few days ago, I was Lauren W. Haston. That's the name my parents gave me, and I love them. And I want to pay it respect because I've spent 49 years living with that name, and I have published under that name, and done a lot of things which make me proud of that name, and so I chose to keep my initials LW. I also have a lot of former students after 14 years of teaching, probably thousands of students, and sometimes one or another of them will need to contact me for a letter of recommendation or some professional advice, and so I want them to be able to find me, hence LW Haston. I have united all of my various identities and websites under the website I keep at lwhaston.com. That's lwhaston.com. And from there, you can link to the Anonymous Anthropologist blog and podcast. I will eventually have to change the name now that I am no longer anonymous, but I suppose I'll get around to that one day. For the moment, it's all together on one page, on one site. You can even click over and look at my photos if you'd like to. I think the most important thing for me to say is that I am proud of who I am. I am proud of everything that I have done in 14 years of teaching community college. I am proud of the music I made when I was a young person and a musician and a songwriter. I am proud of the photos I've taken as an adult. I'm proud of the advice I've given to students and friends and family. I'm proud of the spouse that I am to my wife and the parent that I am to my stepchildren. I'm proud of myself. And I'm proud that I was strong enough to come to the realization that I need to change things about my body in order to be a happier, more complete person, and that me being a happier, more complete person will make me a better teacher and a better parent and a better spouse. Again, I'm proud of myself, and I don't have anything to hide from. I have no reason to hide. When I began the podcast, I was worried that I might say something inappropriate that could get me in trouble, but I realized that that's just not who I am. I'm not going to say anything disrespectful or inappropriate. I'm not going to say something that could potentially get me into some kind of trouble with my employer. That's just not who I am. I'm a respectful person, and as an anthropologist, it's my job to try and understand everyone's point of view. So once again, I have nothing to hide. I have a lot to be proud of, and that's why I am now totally out, no longer anonymous. My name is L.W. Lucas Haston, and I am the transgender anthropologist. Now, what exactly does that mean when I say that I am transgender? I know most of you are thinking, Caitlyn Jenner, right? Well, yeah. Caitlyn Jenner is a transgender individual. Caitlyn was assigned male at birth, or in acronym speak, AMAB, and did not identify as male, struggled her whole life to deal with the reality that she was stuck with a male body, and then later in life realized that she had the means and the will to change that. And now Caitlyn is, I hope, in a body that makes her happier, in a body that suits her actual identity and her own feeling of herself. Now think about what I said a second ago. She realized that she had the means and the will to change her body. This is not, I don't think, all that different from those of you who have decided to change your breasts or fix a crooked smile. I mean, in a way, those things have been made possible by medical technology that did not used to exist, and so in the past, you would have simply had to live with crooked teeth or an insubstantial bust line. But of course, we have the technology to fix those things, and you can have them changed and make them more suited to your own vision of yourself. Being transgender is, of course, a lot deeper than that, because it involves such an intense level of self-hatred that it is a pretty good indicator of potential suicide. A recent study conducted by the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force and the National Center for Transgender Equality showed the rate of attempted suicide among the transgender population in the United States is 41%. 41%. Which is horrifying when you compare it to the 4.6% rate of attempted suicide overall in the United States. It's also higher than the 10 to 20% rate of lesbian, gay, and bisexual adults who report ever having attempted suicide. So, yeah. 41% of transgender-identified individuals attempt suicide at some point in their lives. And if you are the parent of a transgender child, this is the number that leaps off the page at you. For a long time before I started to take seriously my own transgender identity, I was struck by a series of videos and television reports and news articles about families in the middle of the country, conservative people or religious people or just regular people with very young children who identified very strongly as members of the opposite sex. And of course, like any parent, they thought it was a phase, they thought the kid would outgrow it, but eventually it became obvious that that was not going to happen. The child was insistent about their cross-gender identity. They were persistent in asserting this identity, and they were consistent over and over, day after day, week after week, year after year. These kids told their parents in no uncertain terms, "Hey, I'm a boy. Stop thinking of me as a girl." Or the reverse, "Hey, I'm a girl. Stop treating me like you think I'm a boy. And when these parents really listened, when they went online to look for information, when they spoke to clinical professionals to seek information, probably the first thing that they heard was that their children had a 41% likelihood of developing so much self-hatred that he or she was that much more likely to attempt suicide sometime in their life. And so, of course, these parents love their children, and they want them to be happy, and they want them to live. And so they went about the business of fulfilling these children's needs. You might be concerned about the wisdom of treating young children medically or socially as members of the gender to which they were not assigned. Maybe you think that they're too young to know this for sure. But you can only think that if you don't have a child like this. If you don't have a transgender child, then you really have no idea how clear this child can be about his or her identity. In fact, there are some Native American groups who believed very strongly that a child would understand his or her gender identity by the time they hit puberty, if not sooner. And among some groups, they actually had a ritual available which would allow the child to transform and change gender socially. I've got a paper about this that I wrote a long time ago that you can find on my website at lwhaston.com. It's about the Native American berdache. Berdache is not a nice word. It was a French term. It meant kept boy or male prostitute. But what they were talking about were individuals from the northwest of the United States, Native American people, who appeared to European eyes to cross-dress and to identify with members of the opposite sex as far as their own gender identity was concerned. Whether or not these European observations were correct is open for discussion. But we do know that among certain Native American groups, there definitely was the option for a person to change their gender socially. So, for example, you might undergo some sort of ritual as a child, which would give you an opportunity to make a choice between using men's tools or women's tools. And if a biological male chose the women's tools, well, then the women might lead him down to the river and ceremonially bathe him and then dress him in women's garments, and then he would be socially considered female. And if he went and had relationships with men, those would be heterogendered relationships. Okay, this is a little bit off topic, so once again, I will refer you to my website to check out the paper on the berdache if you're interested. The main point that I'm making here is that in traditional societies where the technology does not exist to change people's bodies, there is nonetheless the recognition that some individuals do feel as if they are in the wrong body. This is not a new concept by any means. And then there is the matter of medication. People are concerned about giving very young children hormones or hormone blockers in order to change the way their bodies develop. Well, I can tell you, as a transgender individual, that I would have been spared a lot of pain had I been given estrogen blockers as a child and not had to develop the breasts that I hated so very much. And the truth is, when I hear about children who are given this gift today, I'm actually a little bit envious. I get sad for the child that I was. Still, you may be concerned about the use of these drugs in such young children. Perhaps you're concerned that one day they may decide they made a mistake. Well, I'm here to let you know that most of these effects are actually reversible. If you give a child in a female body estrogen blockers as she matures, then he will fail to develop breasts and will continue to develop a fairly angular body as a male would. That way, he will never have to have the radical double mastectomy that adult female-to-male transgender individuals opt for when they can afford it. if so many years go by and the individual decides that she has made an error because she truly identifies as female, then the only thing she needs to do is stop taking testosterone and any estrogen blockers that she may be on, and her natural estrogen will kick in and her body will change. If a young boy is given estrogen so that he may develop a female physique or a more feminine figure as he matures, all he needs to do is stop taking estrogen, and barring the possibility of having had surgery, a lot of the changes will indeed reverse. So people think that once you take testosterone or estrogen that you can't ever go back, but the truth is that's not entirely true. I know this from personal experience. I actually have a friend who was born female, assigned female at birth, decided in her late 20s that this was a mistake, and transitioned to male, took testosterone, did not have any surgery, but became very, very convincingly masculine, male, facial hair, balding, you name it. And then after so many years realized she had made a mistake and decided to detransition, to stop taking testosterone. And within 1 year, she got her female figure back. There were only a couple of things that were difficult to reverse. Well, or irreversible. One thing that happened is that she lost some hair on her head due to male pattern balding, and there wasn't very much she could do about that. But luckily for her, she'd been trained as a hairstylist, and so was able to disguise it very easily. Her voice had dropped, but simply trying to speak higher in a higher pitch and using a more feminine affectation made that less of a problem. But she got her curves back, and she got her breasts back. She did have to go have some laser hair removal to get rid of the beard stubble that had started to appear after so many years on testosterone. But if you met her today, you would never ever know that she passed for a period of years as a very convincing hirsute man. So I can tell you from personal experience that these things are to a large degree reversible, even if you start them when you are very young. As a transgender individual, I can tell you that it is my considered opinion that it's much better to err on the side of treating a problem than to err on the side of ignoring a problem. And so, when a child or a human being has a challenge of gender, I think the humane thing to do is to help them work through it. In order for the insurance companies to pay for treatment for people with problems of gender, there has to be a diagnosable condition that can then be treated with the prescribed medication or surgery, as the case may be. That's why gender dysphoria is listed in a book called the DSM-5, or the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that psychiatrists and psychologists use to diagnose mental illness. The DSM-5 is the latest version of this sort of Bible of the profession, and it was very, very contentious, especially this particular diagnosis. Lots of people think that gender dysphoria, which we can loosely define as feeling that your body doesn't match your brain in terms of gender. Lots of people feel that this diagnosis is not a mental illness. Most mental illnesses, like anxiety and depression, are treated with psychiatric drugs like Zoloft and Paxil and Wellbutrin and things like that. These are pharmaceutical prescriptions that manage the chemical reactions in your brain and help you to overcome things like anxiety and depression. So it's a mental illness in that there are problems of chemicals or hormones in your brain. Gender dysphoria, if it were a problem of the brain, would be treated with those same kinds of pharmaceuticals. It would be treated with anxiety and depression drugs, which, of course, it frequently is, because gender dysphoric people are also frequently anxious or depressed. But the dysphoria itself is treated with hormones and surgery. In other words, the problem is with the body, not the mind, which makes it a medical diagnosis as opposed to a mental diagnosis, but still Right now, that's where it sits. It sits in the Diagnostic Manual of Mental Illness. And it's very controversial. It's very contentious. And it invites people to judge gender dysphoria as a mental illness. And of course, mental illness is highly stigmatized in this country. However, it gives gender dysphoric individuals the medical coverage they need for treatment. So the best solution for transgender individuals would probably be to have this diagnosis turn into a medical or bodily diagnosis, as in the disconnect between the brain and the body, which is treated by changing the body. Or there is some talk about in the next edition of the DSM, the DSM-6, there would be something called remission. And the idea would be that if you have gender dysphoria, once you're in treatment for it, you go into a sort of remission, which means that you're not actively suffering from it. At this point, I want to make clear that what I've been talking about here is a conflict between one's body and one's mind as far as what sex you are, whether you are male or female. And this is a completely separate thing from one's sexuality, which is a question of to whom one is sexually and romantically attracted. It's a totally separate issue. So in my case, I was in a female body and was compelled to try to identify as female, but found throughout my life that I was only romantically attracted to other females. And so, by the definitions of the day, that made me homosexual. That made me a lesbian. Now that I am male-identified, I am still attracted exclusively to women, and that would appear to make me heterosexual. So these things, sexuality and gender identity, are really separate. Some people transition and discover that their sexuality changes also. There are females who transition to male and then discover that where they were lesbians before, now they are attracted to other men, which would make them homosexual still, but no longer attracted to women. So yeah, there's that too. Sexuality, gender, it's all a chaotic, beautiful spectrum. And we silly, flawed little human beings, we try to make it all comprehensible to ourselves by separating it into these artificial categories of male and female and straight and gay. And you know what? It's all just one big, beautiful spectrum of identity and biology. Now, what exactly does it mean to be gender dysphoric? I suppose that every transgender person would have a different personal way of answering that question. So I will do the best that I can to speak for myself and the little bit that I have learned while trying to figure myself out. According to the DSM-5, a person with gender dysphoria identifies with a gender in opposition to the one with which they were assigned at birth. So, if you were assigned male at birth, AMAB, but you identify as female, you believe that the male body you are in is inappropriate to the way you feel inside as a human being, then you are gender dysphoric. If you are assigned female at birth, AFAB, and you believe that your female body does not match the way you feel inside as a human being, then you are gender dysphoric. It's definitely a very binary definition. There is an assumption, I think, implicit, that there are only two genders with which to identify, that you are either male or female. And I think we're coming to see now that that's not entirely correct either. There are more and more people who are identifying as gender non-binary or gender fluid. And this place here, is where I feel in danger of losing any listener who's not already sort of on board with what I do here in this podcast. Because it's a lot to take in, this whole non-binary gender fluid thing, and I think a lot of people get a little frustrated. I think the term cis, C-I-S, cisgendered, cis men and cis women really aggravates cis men and cis women. I think they just can't stand it. Yeah, I get it. They're just men. They're just women. There's no need to modify those terms because they are the norm. Okay, that's okay. I'm really okay with that. But when transgendered people talk about themselves and speak with each other, we prefer not to think of everybody else as normal and ourselves as just some deviant, messed up version of you. So instead of calling you guys real men and real women, it makes us feel better to think of you in some other term that indicates that there are other ways to be a real man or a real woman. So I personally don't expect anybody who's not transgendered to use the term cisgendered to say that they are cis male or cis female. I get it. That's kind of ridiculous if that's just who you are. But among transgendered people and among academics, we'd like to respect ourselves and each other in a way, once again, that doesn't seem to marginalize us as some kind of deviants. And so we employ the term cis to refer to those individuals whose gender identity is in complete agreement with the gender they have been assigned at birth. I did a podcast a while back about just how indeterminate that can actually be. So take a look on the podcast page and see if you can find the one that discusses intersexed individuals. That's pretty interesting also. So I think there are some people out there, although I doubt that they're the ones listening to this podcast, I think that there are some people out there who just get frustrated with all of this complexity and wonder, why can't we just be who we are? And I think the best answer that I have for that is because we're really a lot smarter than we used to be. And we have greatly improved technology to the point where we understand ourselves and our world so much better than we used to. And all the categories that we put ourselves into, they're all artificially imposed by our cultures upon, as I said before, this chaotic, beautiful spectrum of nature. And as science and our own intelligence reveals to us the complexity of this spectrum, we are changing our vocabulary and our conceptualization of it to accommodate this new understanding. I know that it will take a very long time before the average person gets what I'm saying or agrees with what I'm saying, but the way that this will change will be through people like myself being open and transparent about their transgender identity, and then people who aren't transgender discovering that they know someone and love someone and respect someone who is transgender, and therefore, how bad can it be? That's exactly how gays and lesbians started to get gay and lesbian rights and LGBT rights. Now I've moved from the L to the T, and that's got to be okay with me. Otherwise, what can I say? There might not be any more me. And maybe that's really the bottom line. I think that a lot of trans people get to a place in their lives where they really just can't go on. You reach a breaking point. And I lived 49 years. I lived a complete lifetime. I've lived longer than many other people have in the past and prehistory. I've lived a very long, complete life, and I did the best that I could to deal with what I had. And I needed to make a change in order to continue living. I think most trans people will tell you that they got to a point like that, some kind of point like that, a breaking point, because being trans is such a difficult and challenging thing to deal with that I can't imagine anyone doing it unless they had to. And that's really how I feel. I feel like I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't have to. Now, having said that, I am about 4 months into my process, and I can already tell you that I am much, much happier. And because I'm happier, I'm a better teacher, and I'm a better partner, and I'm a better parent, and possibly, maybe, I'll be an even better podcaster, an even better blogger. Who knows where I will go from here. But I'll leave you with this today. I will be back. I will explain more. I'll talk more about myself. I'll talk more about transgender people and transgender issues. But just like when I identified as a lesbian, that's not all I talked about. Because the truth is I'm way more than that. I'm a complete human being with a lot of other interests and passions, and I'm an educator, and I am an anthropologist. Primarily, I think, first and foremost, I'm a teacher. That's really my strongest identifier. And I intend to continue teaching and talking about anthropology and anything that's relevant to it. So this podcast will move forward, as it has in the past, with topics of concern to anthropology. Once in a while, we'll talk about something in the news or something political. And I hope in the future to be able to interview people. That's really what I'd like to do, and I'd really love to be able to take live calls. I'm looking into, right now, the possibility of getting some funding to make that happen. But, well, if you know anybody, send them my way. I really would love to open this up to live calls and have the equipment necessary to get more than one other person here in the studio with me. And I think conversations are probably going to be way more interesting than just listening to me ramble on. Well, thank you very, very much for coming back to the podcast after such a long absence on my part. Thank you very much for listening to the whole thing, even though it may have been a little shocking, a little surprising. Thank you for hanging in there. Thank you for spreading the word about the Anonymous Anthropologist podcast, about me, lwhaston.com, Lucas Haston. Thank you for sticking around and waiting for the next podcast. I'll do the best I can to get it out to you sometime within the next 10 days, just like I used to. For now, take care of yourselves.
Am I recording?